Hi, this is Pete Fornital with the Crawdaddy Rock Review, produced in association with the editors of Crawdaddy Magazine and presented by Discwasher, producer of Ultimate Record Care Equipment. Stay tuned for a fast hour of music, news, and interviews. Now, with an ear to the ground, a searching eye, and a hand placed squarely on the pulse of today, the Crawdaddy Rock Review presents News on the Run. Fleetwood Mac's Rumours LP has done it, the longest sustained top of the charts album by a rock act ever. Stephen Stills' next album features guest appearances by Peter Frampton and Ron Wood. Dan Hicks, minus the Hot Licks, at Capitol Studios in L.A. Ozark Mountain Daredevils at Caribou. Frankie Valli in New York with producer Charlie Colello. The editors of Crawdaddy Magazine are watching Chicago's Baby What a Big Surprise. Chicago enjoys the unique standing of having made the top 10 at least once during every year of the 70s. Nick Lowe is set to produce the next Graham Parker and the Rumour LP, as well as Dr. Feelgood. Then he'll move on to complete his own solo debut album. Anson Williams of Happy Days is also hard at work on his first album for Chelsea. Rumor has it that Eric Carmen is writing a song for Frank Sinatra's next LP. That's it for News on the Run, presented by the Crawdaddy Rock Review and brought to you by Discwasher. This is Pete Fornital. And now the Crawdaddy Rock Review, presented by Discwasher, gives you a capsule summary of thoughts and reactions to a brand new album release. On first listen, Nona Hendrix's debut album seems a political far cry from LaBelle. This solo effort tackles the contradictions between shattered dreams and idealism, and the question might be asked, is she copping out or coping in a more determined way? It's a surprising switch from LaBelle's generalities and straight-out gospel soul, as Nona Hendrix gets down and covers more complex lyrics with some hearty rock and roll. The editors of Crawdaddy feel the album's contradictions are further unraveled in the personal political metaphor of Once Again, stripped of the brashness that was required for LaBelle's musical frenzy. Nona here shows her mastery of nuance. She may indeed play the game while still believing in the power of possibility. The album's finale, Leaving Here Today, ties up all the loose ends from the struggle between real and ideal. Here, Nona Hendrix returns to pure gospel idealism. We're back with the Crawdaddy Rock Review, brought to you by Discwasher. This is Pete Fornatale, and I'm speaking with Dwight Twilley and Phil Seymour of the Dwight Twilley Band. Fellas, there are countless young people in America who want to be rock and roll stars. Of that number, a small percentage gets to record, and of that small percentage, just a handful make it, do it. You are both well on the way, so close you can almost taste it. What's your story? Where did the Dwight Twilley Band have its origins, Dwight?
Well, I guess, you know, we're from Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is really, you know, kind of in the middle of the country. We were just like everybody else. We met pretty young, like in high school, lived pretty close to each other. Kind of a coincidence, I guess, that we met at a matinee showing of A Hard Day's Night.
That's incredible.
Which is like everyone else in that we were right in the middle of Beatlemania and all that, and really impressed by that and really into it. You know, and we started recording. We were basically one of those garage band recorders. The same day that we met at Hard Day's Night, we immediately went to my house and started recording on a little, you know, funky tape recorder, and never stopped, really. And when we were really young, we took a little trip. We had a little 58 Chevy station wagon and a couple $100 and a few tapes and a guitar, you know. And we were setting out to go to Nashville. But on the way to Nashville, we didn't really plan on spending much time in Memphis, but we just stopped there, I think, like for a day. And I think we were just driving down the road, and we saw this record company. It was called Sun Records.
You had not heard of Sun Records?
We didn't know what it was, you know. It was just, a record company. Well, let's go in there and see if we can get somebody to listen to our tapes.
For anyone who might not know, Sun Records was, of course, the starting label for Elvis Presley.
Yeah, Jerry Lee Lewis. I think Jerry Phillips listened to the tape. He probably doesn't even remember it now. You know, it was a couple of little kids. And he introduced us to Ray Harris. We came over to see him, and this was actually the first person that sat down and listened to our tape and all that. And he scared us to death because, you know, we'd never been inside a record company anyway before. And he just was immediately, all right, let's cut an album, you know, and that just scared us to death. And it was like a year later that we even got back with him, you know. After we got a little more experienced and went other places and got turned down, you know, we understood a little more what was going on.
He was too enthusiastic.
Yeah, it scared you off. He was a very wild, you know, sort of guy, even though we didn't have really any interest in any of this Memphis, Elvis, Sun stuff, because we were just into the Beatles.
Okay, so here was a man who had a direct role in your careers, and you were kind of at odds in terms of what you liked and what he knew about.
Actually, yeah, really, he pounded all this, the Memphis old rock and roll philosophy into our heads without us even wanting it, which had a big effect on us, you know, and he really got us rocking. And even till long after that we left, you know, and weren't even associated with him anymore, we really didn't realize what it was until a few years later we discovered Elvis, basically. We had our own Elvis mania, Elvis renaissance for us, and we discovered, hey, wait a minute, somebody else did it besides the Beatles.
You were Beatle children.
Yeah.
Do you recall the first experience that you had with Beatle music, and what did it mean to your lives at the time?
We saw a
Ed Sullivan show.
Ed Sullivan, and it was just what is that? I'm sure that it probably really changed our lives.
Okay, let's stop for a minute and hear the result of the many forces that we've been talking about. Let's listen to a song from your first album, Sincerely. You Were So Warm by the Dwight Twilley Band. From the first recorded album by the Dwight Twilley Band entitled Sincerely, that's You Were So Warm. Okay, now how did all this come about? What happened after you left Ray Harris? Were you any closer to the Dream?
We were really confident at that point. We really felt like we could go anywhere and make a hit at that point. So we went back to that little studio and just made a demo of what we thought were really good songs. Like on that demo tape were songs like,
rough versions
of You Were So Warm, Release Me, and things like that. So we recorded I'm on Fire, and it was a hit, which was very strange, because it was all happening so fast, and we didn't have a manager or anything. And so here we were, a few months later, no manager.
A top 20 record.
And with a top 20 record,
no album.
One knew who we were, no album. And actually, by the time that it got to the top 20, we did have the album ready. We had an album ready to release. The album was going to come out like a couple weeks after You Were So Warm. But, the very week that You Were So Warm was like bubbling under the charts was when the Leon Russell and Denny Cordell went into their lawsuits, splitting up Shelter Records. And finally, about 8 months later, Shelter made a deal with ABC Records. And we released our Sincerely album about 9 months late.
When did the next transition recording-wise come about for you?
Well, I guess, everything was totally untogether after that lawsuit, and they just, finally popped out the old album. So we just basically quickly just hired a whole band to back us up, and we just fronted it and went out and did a quickie promotional tour.
Audiences don't really know you initially. I guess you've done club dates and opening act.
Yeah, we're not really established performers yet, which is something we're looking forward to.
Right.
And because with this new album that we have coming out, it's the first time that we actually have all the, minor things like a manager and record company and a band and some of those little things.
The new album is called
Twilly Don't Mind.
And that is the title track as well. Let's listen to the title track from the brand new album by the Dwight Twilly Band. That's Twilly Don't Mind, the title song from the brand new album by the Dwight Twilly Band. What are your hopes from the new record, guys?
We really want it to get out and be heard by the kids. It's the most important thing to us.
Which
kids?
That's
the idea of making making records for us, is to make music for the kids. Really, the younger kids is what we're interested in. We know we're popular with the older audiences, We know we get a lot of FM play, and that's fine, But I just think there's too few bands that are, have much consideration for the younger audience.
It would be a shame if only reincarnations of the Beatles are what young people could go to, that they can't have their own taste of the excitement and inventiveness that the Beatles brought to music.
I think you've got, then you see where we're coming from.
Phil, does that, I get from your presence here today that you are separate but equal partners in this adventure.
Totally.
Does being called the Dwight Twilley Band create any problems for you, Phil?
No, he writes all the songs, and that's how we got into Shelter, was through a publishing deal, so that's understandable. You know, it was just Dwight Twilley, Dwight Twilley, Dwight Twilley, and it really is a catchy name. And just anything like Dwight and Phil or anything like that, you know, it's just
Phil
really
Twilley
hard. It's hard to come up with a name. I think it's a great name. It doesn't bother me at all, because I do a lot of lead singing. I sing Twilley Don't Mind, you know, so what can you say?
That's terrific. Listen, as a Beatle baby myself, I admire what you have done in the past. I look forward to your future adventures, including the brand new album called Twilley Don't Mind, and I hope all of your business problems are solved forever and that it's clear sailing ahead. My guests have been Dwight Twilley and Phil Seymour of the Dwight Twilley Band. Thank you both, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Good luck
Thank
to you.
You.
This is Pete Fornital, back with the Crawdaddy Rock Review, brought to you by Discwasher. It's time now for Crawdaddy Comedy Classics, as we revisit the early 60s and join the master, Steve Allen, on his original television show. Often, Allen's co-star was simply the telephone. His so-called funny phone calls became a regular feature, as Allen responded to want ads or audience requests to dial mom, or maybe just a friendly hello to the Queen of England. Steve Allen didn't need Louis Nye or Don Knotts or Stephen Eady. His own insanity was his best guest. Here now, a long-distance call to Arthur Goldstein's mother.
We got another number during that last commercial, gentleman in New York City. Your mother lives there, does she? Okay, we'll try her. What's your last name?
Goldstein.
Goldstein.
Hello?
Hello, this is the Acme Television Rating Service. Do you have a television set, madam?
Yes, I have.
I see. Are you watching it this evening?
No, not at this hour.
Not at this hour?
No.
Well, we have to check, you know, as to who watches these very late programs, because they are on the air, and a lot of people do get quite angry when we get them out of bed, but after all, we have to make a dollar, too. Did I get you out of bed, madam?
Yes, I was asleep.
You were asleep. All right, I'll put that in the goof column here. I see.
That's 10 of 2.
What's a?
10 minutes of 2.
It's 10 minutes of 2. Oh, I'll put that in the very bad goof column now.
Is it 10 minutes of 2 or 10 minutes of 1? No, I think it's 10 minutes.
What's a?
10 to 2 or 10 to 1. I can't see.
I believe you're still half asleep, aren't you?
No.
Do you ever watch television late in the evening?
You mean the late break show?
Well, not particularly, no.
I think it's pretty good time.
Is this Mrs. Goldstein?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Do you know where your wandering boy is tonight?
Who's that?
Who is that? How many sons have you?
Two.
Two. What's your first name?
Rose.
Bart Goldstein. He your son?
Who?
Oh, Art Goldstein.
No. What's so funny?
What say?
What's so funny?
Well, there's a fella here who says you're his mama. And when you say no, it breaks us all up. This is the Santa Ana police calling.
Something funny.
If I ever do, we're all in trouble. But no, really, Art Goldstein is here, and he says you're his mother. You don't have a son named Art Goldstein?
Art?
Yes. Do you have
a son, Arthur Goldstein?
Oh, Arthur.
Where's this call coming from?
Where is it coming from? Well, Art is in the saloon here tonight. He's not drinking himself. He doesn't drink, does he?
I hope not.
No, Art is out here. This is actually, I'll be serious with you. This is Steve Allen calling from Hollywood.
Oh, go on. You don't sound like him at all.
to one yourself.
No, really, I mean it.
What's that?
Are you calling from California?
Sure. Incidentally, you will accept the charges, won't you? No, Arthur is here, and we just wanted to make sure that our program was getting in there, but now I'm not even sure our phone call is.
No, your phone call. Are you Steve Allen?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes, I am. Don't I sound like him?
I don't know.
I imitate his voice. Some people think it's very convincing.
No, I don't think you are.
You don't think so?
But I know you're calling for the long distance by that sound that I hear.
Yes. Do you hear anybody laughing here?
Oh, that I hear, and it's silly. Well, you know, it's good.
Well, we have 400...
That laugh is very contagious. Everybody else is laughing there.
Yes, well, all of us are drinking and laughing here. Listen, Art, no, really, Art's here at this wild party. We've had belly dancing and everything here tonight. But I just want to let you know that Art's in good shape, and he'll probably call you tomorrow and tell you more about this than you will.
No, he doesn't call me. He waits for me to call him.
Well, Mrs. Goldstein, you're marvelous. The only reason I have to hang up now is because we're going to have Tony Bennett sing for us here. Otherwise, you're marvelous. I'd love to keep...
Oh, well, I'll tune in. Where will I hear it?
Well, actually, you'll hear it in 2 weeks.
Oh.
That's kind of hard to understand at 2 a.m, isn't it? But I bet Arthur will call you this time, and he'll explain why you'll hear it in
now,
2 weeks.
Now, really, tell me, who are you?
This is Steve Allen. Honest.
Honest?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to brag about it.
Mrs. Goldstein, you are a doll, and the only reason, as I say, I have to hang up now is because Tony Bennett's going to sing for us, and we're getting near the end of our show.
All right, meanwhile, you can look up my son, Arthur Goldstein. He's in Los Angeles.
That's it for today. We'll be back next time with more comedy classics on the Crawdaddy Rock Review, presented by Discwasher. And now the Crawdaddy Rock Review, presented by Discwasher, gives you a capsule summary of thoughts and reactions to a brand new album release. What do you do with a band that after 14 years refuses to play dead? The Rolling Stones have the answer. Release another live album to convince the skeptics. Love You Live is the new double set which finds the Stones powerfully alive and well, Keith Richards' problems notwithstanding. This is the third live Stones album, and although they have long since passed from survivors to legends, Love You Live does not show a group coasting on its 60s reputation. Here, the Stones prove themselves a 70s band with a powerhouse sound. Ron Wood handles the revolving guitar spot here, with the band fleshed out with Billy Preston's keyboards, Ollie Brown's percussion, and Ian Stewart's piano. Oh, The first two sides are the aggressive result from a Paris concert last year. Mick Jagger's vocals are, as usual, semi-coherent, but he serves as the moderating human influence over the heavy metal barrage. The third side of Love You Live is what Stones fans have been waiting for, a collection of oldies recorded at Toronto's El Macambo Club last spring. They include Manish Boy and Crackin' Up, two Bo Diddley numbers the Stones have never recorded before. Crackin' Up fares better of the two, with Ian Stewart's double-time piano adding considerable raunch to the effort. Little Red Rooster is the ancient Stones specialty that is more electric here than on their first studio recording. Please drive home. The album ends with a return to Paris for a string of Stones anthems. It's Only Rock and Roll, Brown Sugar, and the finale crowd raiser, Jumpin' Jack Flash. The editors of Crawdaddy feel that Love You Live is solid rock and roll for the late 70s. Invigorating reminder from the Rolling Stones that there's something to be said for experience.